Welcome to Parasitology Revisited, a series of revision podcasts for BVM&S graduate entry and infection and immunity students. What's in a Name? By Dr. Tudor Jones. During the parasitology course, I refer to a number of host types when talking about individual parasite life cycles, some with apparently very similar properties. In this podcast, I'm going to summarize the features of the most important host types that you need to know about and that I would expect you to include in answers to examination questions on host types and life cycles. The two principal host types that you need to know about are the definitive and intermediate host, which I've already covered in some detail in the Parasite Life Cycle podcast, but for completeness, I'll also summarize them here. A definitive host is the host in which parasite sexual reproduction takes place and is found in both direct and indirect life cycles. An intermediate host is only found in an indirect life cycle, where the parasite undergoes a phase of development, such as asexual reproduction, as in the trematodes and the cestodes, or a progression through a number of larval stages, as in the metastrongyle nematodes. Parasites with an indirect life cycle usually need to cycle between the definitive and intermediate hosts to complete their life cycle. However, remember that it is sometimes difficult to ascribe host types to some arthropod-born protozoa, as the point where sexual reproduction takes place is either unknown or is spread between different hosts. Other types of hosts that you need to know about are transport hosts and paratenic hosts, which play a particularly important part in the epidemiology of some nematodes. Transport hosts, as the name suggests, move the infective form of the parasite, such as cysts, oocysts or eggs, to another location, either inside themselves, as in earthworms, or on their body or feet, as in birds and animals. Transport hosts are not an integral part of the life cycle, and no parasite development takes place inside or on the outside of a transport host. Cysts, oocysts and eggs can also be carried on boots, tyres or by water, which in this course we have referred to as fomites, although you might sometimes see them referred to as vectors. However, we have reserved the term vector for arthropods which act as agents for the transmission of parasites such as Babesia. Paratenic hosts differ from transport hosts in that a limited amount of parasite development can take place in them, such as the emergence of a larval stage from the egg stage, as in Ascarid nematodes, which is followed by larval migration into the tissues of the host. The larva then remains in that stage in the host tissues until the paratenic host is eaten. This means that large numbers of larvae can accumulate in the tissues of a paratenic host over time, so sometimes they are referred to as an accumulator host. Paratenic hosts also act as an important reservoir infection for as long as the paratenic host remains alive. Paratenic hosts, as in transport hosts, are not an integral part of the parasite's life cycle. In other words, the parasite life cycle can be completed in the absence of transport or paratenic hosts. Examples of paratenic hosts include earthworms for nematodes of birds and rats and mice for ascarids of dogs and cats. You can see from this that these paratenic hosts are part of a predator-prey relationship. To further illustrate the differences between these host types, I'll use the earthworm as an example of how one animal species can act as a host in a number of ways according to the parasite species. Firstly, the earthworm acts as a very effective transport host for a number of parasites, as the worms are constantly taking in soil through the mouth, which passes slowly through the gut, eventually emerging from the anus. Any cysts, oocysts or eggs present in the soil will be carried through the gut and eventually deposited somewhere else as the worm moves through the soil. Of course, if the worm gets eaten while the parasite is still in transit in the gut of the worm, then the host can become infected in that way. Secondly, the earthworm acts as a paratenic host for the ascarid nematodes of poultry, such as Ascaridia and Heteraechis. Any infective eggs in the soil, which, as you will know, being ascarids, will contain the second larval stage, hatch in the gut of the worm, and the larva migrates into the tissues of the worm, but doesn't develop any further. If the earthworm gets eaten by a bird, then the larval development restarts in the gut of the bird. Individual earthworms have been shown to live up to 3 years, so they can act as an important reservoir of infection for poultry, as well as potentially spreading infection to other areas. Finally, the earthworm acts as an intermediate host for Metastrongylus, the metastrongyl nematode of pigs. In this case, the parasite has an indirect life cycle with the pig as definitive host, harbouring the adult nematodes, while the earthworm acts as an intermediate host for some of the larval stage. The earthworm picks up the infection while feeding on soil containing larvated nematode eggs. The second larval stage in the egg emerges in the gut of the earthworm and then migrates to the earthworm tissues, as we've seen previously in the paratenic host scenario. However, in the case of Metastrongylus, larval development continues through to the third larval stage in the earthworm tissues, after which larval development stops until the worm is eaten by a pig. Make sure you understand that when the earthworm acts as an intermediate host, it is an integral part of the parasite's life cycle. But when it acts as a transport or paratenic host, the parasite life cycle can be completed in the absence of earthworms. You can find a graphic illustrating these differences in host types in the presentation that I used in my third nematode lecture, which you can find on the Parasitology website on www.vet.ed.ac.uk/parasitology. Of course, the earthworm also acts as a definitive host for a range of its own parasites, which we haven't considered in this course. Other types of host that I have briefly mentioned are accidental and dead-end host. Accidental hosts are animal species that can become infected with a parasite, but are not part of the parasite's natural life cycle, although they can be involved in transmission. An example would be the infection of sheep with Toxoplasma, a parasite that cycles naturally between cats and mice. Sheep acquire the infection by ingesting oocysts passed by cats in their feces, and the parasite develops in the sheep in the same way as it does in the mouse intermediate host. Cats can become infected by eating raw sheep meat containing the bradyzoite cysts, but under normal conditions this wouldn't be considered to be an important route of transmission back to the cat. The degree of parasite development in the sheep is more than is characteristic of that taking place in the paratenic host, and the sheep would not be considered to an intermediate host, as the life cycle of Toxoplasma can be completed in the absence of sheep. Humans can also become infected with Toxoplasma, but in this case they would be classed as a dead-end host, as it is very unlikely that humans would act as a source of infection for cats. Another example of a dead-end host is the horse, as in the case of Sarcocystis neurona, a protozoan parasite that cycles naturally between opossums and birds, with horses becoming infected by ingesting oocysts from opossum feces. Although accidental hosts and dead-end hosts don't have an important role in the epidemiology of infection, the impact of infection on these hosts can sometimes be severe, as we see worldwide with abortion in sheep infected with Toxoplasma, or the neurological problems seen in horses infected with Sarcocystis neurona in North America. From the point of view of this year's examinations, your progress through the rest of the course, and also after you graduate, it's important that you get to grips with the terminology used to describe the different kinds of hosts used by parasites, and in particular how the characteristics of each host type impacts on your understanding of epidemiology, disease, and influences your choice of control options for particular parasites. You also need to be aware that in some literature, especially in the USA, the terms transport and paratenic host are often used synonymously. But if you do that in the exam, you will lose marks. This podcast includes topics that I have covered in a number of my parasitology lectures, which you can look back on either in your own lecture notes or via the parasitology website on www.vet.ed.ac.uk/parasitology.